Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I'm the last person who would ever have gone against capitalism. Seriously, all my life I was a supporter of capitalism. And that is because we whites in Southern Africa, we all said, whether we were in Rhodesia or South Africa, or the Portuguese, we all said that we're against communism. We are capitalists. We're fighting for the Western system. We're against communism. And we fought communism. And we said communism is evil shit. And these blacks that are fighting us are evil crap. They're even evil towards their own people. This is the system we're fighting against because our system is better. Our system is free and our system is the Western way. Basically, it's the white man's way. And whatever the errors of capitalism were, I never found anything better, and therefore I could not see that you needed to destroy capitalism. But in the last 8 years, since I woke up to these Jewish issues and the truth about World War II, I must tell you that my entire view has changed massively. And in this video, I want to discuss capitalism. But I want to discuss especially a peculiar angle of capitalism, and that is what I'd call Jewish capitalism. Because the Jews themselves might actually be, and I'm talking not the super rich Jews, I'm talking the average Jew. The Jews themselves might be the greatest proof that this system of capitalism does not actually work. That capitalism cannot work. It cannot work. Now, part of my thinking that has made me venture into this line of thinking is simply being on the internet and trying to make things work for myself and observing other whites in other countries and in South Africa and the right wing and the whites in the white right struggling to exist. And as I'm watching us struggle to exist, I've begun asking myself questions. And those questions that I've asked myself, those are the things that we're going to discuss here. I've thought for a long time, and even in my private discussions with other people, like Alex Linder, who's been struggling with the same problems for the same reasons, and Alex, on one of our shows, said things like, you know, if there's one thing we whites need, it's money. Our movement needs money. We need money. You know, and they're doing everything they can to cut off the money for our movement. And anything that whites do, the first thing the Jews do is they cut off the money. But if you actually look closer, you'll see that it's not just whites who get treated like this. The Jews cut off money even to blacks who don't go along with their stuff. It turns out that money is the real issue here. But it gets deeper than that. So let's just take a look at capitalism a bit, capitalism and communism. I just want to dash through a few things and make a couple of points before I focus on this thing of why is it that our things are not working? Because the question is, you know, what's going wrong for us? What is wrong? Why are we failing? You know, why does capitalism work so well for liberals and for conservatives and even for the Bible Belt, but it doesn't work for us? And if you look carefully, like I say, at some of the blacks and some of the others, you'll see that for them too, there are things that don't work. But I want to take a closer look at this because there is something, a realization that I came to that kind of sealed this thing for me. It kind of ended my thoughts on this matter about what exactly is going on here. So here's a joke. We'll start with the jokes, but the joke itself is full of nonsense. So here's the kind of joke that years ago I would have laughed at and enjoyed, and I would have said, yeah, there's some truth to this thing. So it says, socialism. Socialism, you have two cows and you give one to your neighbor. So in other words, you lose some of your possessions. Communism. You have two cows, the government takes both and gives you the milk. And I would have said, yeah, that could be true. That sounds true. Fascism. You have two cows, the government takes both and sells you the milk. Maybe, because I didn't really know what fascism was. Nazism. You have two cows, the government takes both and shoots you. Let me tell you, 10 years ago, I'd have believed that crap. That's just total hogwash. That's just total hogwash. And probably what they say about fascism is also not quite right, I'm sure. So let's look at another one. New Dealism. This is Roosevelt. Roosevelt, the American communist, surrounded by Jews and commies. And it says, you have two cows, the government takes both, shoots one, milks the other, and throws the milk away. And who knows, maybe that is an apt description of what Roosevelt did, because I've never dug into his New Deal, but it sounded like a bunch of junk to me. Whatever it was, it didn't really work. But Jews were pushing it. And then, of course, capitalism. You have two cows, you sell one and buy a bull. So, yay for capitalism. Capitalism comes out the winner. Capitalism is the only one that makes sense. You've got two cars, you get rid of the one, and you get rid of it for money, and you buy a bull, and so you're going to end up with more cows. So, yay, the only one that's sane. But actually, that's not true. Here's another definition of capitalism versus communism. So here it says, the expectation, capitalism is freedom. Yay, we're free. This whole issue of freedom, by the way, this freedom, what I'd call this Jewish freedom, that's another one that I need to get back to, because this is also, there's also a lot of crap involved in this. This freedom that you apparently believe you're getting, this freedom is itself deceptive in many ways. This thing is a topic I'm going to come back to, this Jewish freedom that we all got. So capitalism, the expectation is freedom. The reality is this. The rich just squeeze every penny out of you. Not quite sure if I totally agree with that negative view. I don't agree with that cynical view either. But we'll get back to what exactly is capitalism, what exactly is communism. So then here the expectation of communism is scary, and there's the Jew Karl Marx. And then it says the reality is this. And there you see what appears to be a sort of a colored type woman busy inoculating the black children. This is also crap. This is pure crap. There's Che Guevara, the commie. And this is probably Cuba. And this is total bullshit. South Africans have actual experience of Cuban medical capabilities. It's total hogwash, it's total propaganda, and not that successful either. total junk. This is complete garbage, this. This is probably closer to what capitalism really is. Consumer capitalism. And there you've got Uncle Sam, and he says, I want you to buy crap. And it's got the faces of capitalism. Adidas, Reebok, Burger King, Coca-Cola, Ford. Ford. And I want you to buy crap. So it's got Ford in there, Pizza Hut, McDonald's, etc. This, there is a lot of truth in this. I want you to buy crap. This is the consumer society where all that you do is you spend your time and money buying shit. And you buy shit, all kinds of shit. And in here, you don't control the means of production. The rich control the means of production. And you just buy whatever shit the rich are selling you. And there's a lot of shit that goes out of this system. This is one of the problem areas of capitalism. In that all that you are is a worker, and whatever money you get, you run around just spending it wildly on all kinds of junk. And that in and of itself is your freedom. This is part of the freedom that you got. Now, it's great being able to get all kinds of products, but there is a huge wastefulness in capitalism. Though I'm actually not going to go into the wastefulness of capitalism, the needless duplication. Yes, it's nice to have a choice between a couple of makes of cars. Instead of having two makes of cars to choose from, you got 100 makes of cars to choose from. How many makes do you really need? How many kinds of things do you really need? Do you really need all that diversity? I'm all for giving people chances, etc., but I think that this thing has gone way beyond any kind of reason. And a deeper discussion is, what do you actually need? What are we actually trying to prove in this system? But this is what the system has become, and this combined with advertising and propaganda in the media, it just makes you a consumer, and you just run around working for money, spending money, working for money, spending money. And that is the sort of rat race you got yourself into. And now with the problem of whites, white survival, white politics, we need to ask ourselves, is this system really delivering to us what we need? And part of that will be what I'm going to discuss. Then there's this Ben Garrison cartoon which says, there you've got the Jew, and the Jew apparently represents capitalism, and it says, I am the great and powerful wizard of debt. So here we go to banking, to the Fed, to central banking. And it says here, the retarded Goyim. And it says, you gutless Goyim lack the heart and brains to understand what we do. Now go. And over here, you've got, and pay no attention to that man who wants to audit it. So this man wants to audit the system, and it's called the Jewish money sack and Jewish wealth and power. And this is the invention of money out of thin air. This has got a lot of truth to it. And maybe this is worth just sitting and pondering a little bit, because this is very important actually. The key here, and this is really important, the key here is that if you look at the world and how the world functions, you'll find that he who controls the money supply, actually controls all activity. If there's lots of money, then everybody's busy. If there's no money, then people sit around and they look for the money and they look for the jobs. All you have to do is look at 2020, this year 2020, and COVID. And what was the first thing the United States government did? They pumped out trillions. I think it was $3 trillion. They invented $3 trillion out of thin air, and they pumped that into the economy. And now lots of things are booming. Gold exploded through the roof. Even Bitcoin went up. Stock markets are running around happily. So they just pumped $3 trillion into the economy using the Fed. And now everything's okay. Now people are running around again. In South Africa, they also cut interest rates dramatically. House prices and property prices were collapsing like crazy. The property market in South Africa is totally Jew controlled. Totally Jew controlled property in South Africa. All the most expensive properties, all the big investments, shopping malls, all the big things, all the big commercial stuff, totally under Jewish control. And all they had to do was just cut the interest rates, and suddenly property prices have exploded, house prices have gone up, suddenly the market is functioning. So there is massive truth in this thing. There's massive truth in this, in that he who can create money drives economic activity. He who can create money drives all activity, actually. And if the government doesn't control money, but it's controlled through other mechanisms like banks, so at the one end you've got the Fed representing central banks. In the rest of the Western world, we don't have the Fed, but we have central banks, and it's the same process. So in the rest of the Western world, we've got central banks. So the one big thing is the central bank, which is also privately owned and not owned by the government. But the central bank working in cahoots with the government, the central bank is sort of the rich man's link to the government and the central bank work together. And then if they decide that they want to do things like cut interest rates or create more credit, then they can do that. And that is a sort of semi-government controlled way of kicking off activity. And then what you have is you've got the banks themselves through the creation of credit, and the banks themselves go and they create even more money. So if the Fed creates $1 trillion, or the South African Central Bank creates, you know, 10 billion rand, then what you have is they pump that money into the banking system, and then inside the banking system, this money is also multiplied, and it's multiplied through the concept of credit. The very basic thing of credit is it's a risk type of thing. So what happens is if a bank gets $1 million in deposits, it doesn't have to loan out only $1 million. It actually can loan out $4 million. Because what actually transpires is that the bank, when it loans out money, the amount of money that is drawn on by the people who are loaned the money, the actual amount of money that's actually pulled out of the bank, is actually only about a quarter of the money that's actually being loaned out. So from statistics and stuff, what you have is, like in South Africa, if a bank has got 100 million rand, then the bank is only required to put a quarter of that into the central bank. That's all that it needs to do. So a simple ratio is that one quarter, about 28% or so, about one quarter of the money that is lent out actually needs to exist physically in the bank. That's all. And beyond that, the bank can go crazy. So the more money you put into the bank, if you put 100 million into the bank in deposits, the bank can then loan out 400 million, roughly. And so that multiplication of money is known as credit. It's done through credit cards, it's done through various forms of loans, etc. And that creates even more fictitious money. So it's actually a system that feeds on itself. So let's say the Fed puts out $1 trillion, then, and it invented $1 trillion out of thin air, then along come the banks and they take that $1 trillion and they turn it into $4 trillion. So at the end of the day, the final thing of $4 trillion that hits the economy, that is actually all money that was invented out of thin air. The Fed did the original magic. The banks then added a multiplier effect to it. So strictly speaking, the U.S. government pumping $3 trillion into the U.S. economy this year, one would imagine that once it goes through the banking system, it actually turns into $12 trillion, because there's a leverage effect on this. I think Renegade Tribune did an article on this, and they said something like it even goes to $20 trillion or something, I think. I can't remember exactly. But that's the point, is that the government pumps out a certain amount, but that in and of itself is further magnified by the banking and credit system. So the crux here is that if you want people to be active, you just invent money. As long as there's a system that's trusted and it comes out through the banks and through the businesses and the government, it just adds impetus to things. So in other words, if the government were to cut back all credit and stop the issuing of money, all economic activity would cease. And if the government wants to really make economic activity explode, it just creates money out of thin air. These are very important principles, and the super rich and the Jews are sitting in there tapping into the system. And they can control either partly or in various levels, they control part of this. This is very important, because this concept of money and the creation of money and its impact on whites, that is very important. This is very, very important. Hitler also dealt with this issue, and he solved the problem nicely. But this thing is the key to everything. Money supply. But money supply is not really the heart of what I'm going to discuss today. But I thought I'd mention this. This is very important to understand as a principle. Because whether you're a capitalist or a national socialist or a fascist or whatever, you are going to need a money supply. But the key part of it is going to be who controls the money supply. Do you control your own money supply, or is there a Jew sitting behind you controlling the money supply? But money supply is very, very, very important for whites to understand, because this thing is the key to running your own country. Here's another Ben Garrison cartoon that I love, and this cartoon is fun, and it's got lots of truth in it. And also, there are certain lessons out of this cartoon, by the way, that it really is worthwhile for whites to remember. Whites who are serious about the West. And it's called the Crony Capitalism Pyramid. And right at the top are the super rich. And they say, be happy, all is well. Super rich, lovely time up there. Then you get the rich. And then you get the middle class. Everything's falling apart for the middle class. Middle class are going down, and they're going down in flames. And then you get the poor, and they're just falling into a bottomless pit. Part of the truth in this system is this, that the rich and the super rich are not going to fight the system. They are not going to change the system. They're not going to improve the system. And whites and the middle class here who are looking for leadership and help, you're not going to get it because everything's still great and coming up roses for this lot over here. So don't expect these people at the top to be helping us. We've got to drive our own agenda because if we don't, nobody's going to drive it. Because that lot up there, they're as happy as hell. They're as happy as hell. Do not expect the rich and the super rich to save you. They're not going to save you or me. Never. All is well in their world. In their world, it's great and it's getting better. This is a more realistic view of capitalism versus communism. And this brings us much closer to the actual truth about life. And here's somebody who put together this meme, and it says capitalist, and you see George W. Bush, and it says America isn't true capitalism, climate change isn't happening, we'll bring freedom to Iraq. And then we got Stalin, the communist, and it says Russia wasn't true communism, the gulags never happened, and we brought equality to Korea. And in here, you've obviously got the theory that doesn't really match the reality. But then what you've also got is this thing, where you've got the violence used by the capitalist. We'll bring freedom to Iraq. And then you've got violence brought by the communists to Korea and also Vietnam and Africa. So at the end of the day, and it says here two sides of the same coin. So at the end of the day, one of the things that you're going to see about these systems is that it isn't always a true debate about the nature of the system itself. It's not always a true debate about is capitalism better than communism. That isn't always a valid comparison. And when I was younger, I thought it was all about, is this system better than that system? But in reality, there's a deeper thing that we don't discuss and never discuss. Never discuss. And yet it's a critical part of it. And that thing that we always miss out on is this thing of ownership. Ownership. You've never heard anybody talk about ownership in capitalism or communism or Nazism or anything. In fact, probably the Nazis are the only ones who've ever even alluded to or suggested that there's such a thing. But nobody's ever discussed ownership of the political system. That is the one thing that is here, is that these communists, they're living the life, even though they supposedly represent a apparently classless system, yet they are living the life and they can do anything the hell they want. They've actually even got more power than the capitalists. The capitalists have got lots of power, but these guys are actually even more ruthless and can do more. These guys get away with large numbers of things, but they have a minor amount of, let's call it, oversight, where people manage to, in some way or other, try to contain them, whereas these guys are not contained and controlled and they just do what the fuck they want. These guys are very close to that, or somewhat close to that, but they do have a little bit of stuff where people do watch them. And actually, what you're really looking at is a battle between two elites. This elite and their mechanism of control versus that elite and their mechanism of control. These guys can be more brutal. They can go and send someone and shoot someone in the head. These guys can't do it quite as openly, but they also do have lots of power, and they can also misuse and abuse things. So a big thing to consider in this discussion of systems is ownership. Which elite owns their system? And in our system, you know, do we own our own system? How true are these guys to us? And when you find the Jew floating around in the background, then you ask yourself, how much of our system is actually owned by ourselves? And then another discussion that also doesn't take place, that a lot of whites get wrong, is the discussion that not only are we dealing with two elites who are owners of their system, but the other thing is that any state has got the same mechanisms. Every state has got a police force. Every state has got a legal system. And every state has got an army, has got an intelligence system, etc. And every state can use its army as a tool to go and smash somebody else. So regardless of the fact that these are different systems with different owners, as a state, they've got the same tools available to them. And if this state wants to go and destroy another state, they can. And if this state wants to go and destroy another state, they can. This is their propaganda. This is their propaganda for the reason they did it. This is their propaganda for the reason and the success of what they are doing. But ultimately, this state can use violence and death, and this state can use violence and death. And so therefore, any system that we have, regardless of who owns it, it has the ability to use violence and death as part of the state mechanism. And you mustn't lose sight of that. That is also very important, because that will define who the enemies are of that system. And we as whites, there are two questions here for us. The one is, do we own our own system? Do we own our own system? And if we don't own it directly, are the elite of this system, are they loyal to us as whites? Or are they now loyal to all kinds of other things that doesn't help us at all? And finally, who do they define as the enemy? Because they've got the ability to use violence and death. And who can they define as the enemy? Are they going to define us as the enemy? Or are they going to protect us? And that is where the violence of the state comes into it. Can that state or will that state work against us? If you live inside that state, can you become an enemy of the state? Or, if you live outside that state, can that state come and kill you? Like us in South Africa, you know? Would America come and kill us in South Africa? That kind of question. Or, like they've done in Europe, where they go and they kill Germans and Italians, etc. So, there are two questions here. The one is, who owns it? I suppose you could turn it into three questions. Who owns your system? Are the owners loyal to you? Do they even give a fuck about you? And then the other thing is, all systems have access to violence. All systems have access to violence. And even these Anglo-American types who pretend that they just live for peace and what's right, they go and they kill. They kill even more than the Europeans ever killed. They're actually very brutal. And the British are a perfect example. The British have killed more people than literally anybody else. And America's on that path. So they're busy preaching, you know, we come in peace, we come in peace. But it's really a case of we come in peace, shoot to kill, shoot to kill. And the question is, who are they killing? So those three questions, the owners, who are the elite who own the system? Because all systems are owned by an elite. They always are and always will be. Secondly, how loyal is that elite to whites? And thirdly, who will they harm? Are they going to harm whites? Because ultimately you'll see that this basic structure will always be there, and whatever we replace it with will always have a similar basis, in that there's going to be an elite. The elite is going to rule the common people, and then that elite has got access to machines of death, otherwise known as the military. Normally regarded as a, quote, defense force, but it's actually an attacking force. And ownership and control of this structure is really what whites need. When you've got ownership and control of your own structure, that is really the most important thing. And if that structure is loyal to you, then you're A for a way. But regardless of all the Jewish and other junk, you cannot have a system like this system, which claims to be classless. You cannot have these things. All systems have got these basic structures. All systems. And you cannot get away from it. You might be able to make certain modifications, maybe due to technology, but those structures are real. And those structures exist from the beginning of time. Here's a little cartoon which shows the mighty dollar and capitalism, and somebody is at the top, the elite at the top. Everybody else is clambering up into that top, and they're busy getting kicked down. This is the reality of how life is. This is how life really is. And in ancient times, in prior times, prior to the democratic age, these things were even fixed. They even had fixed structures. You couldn't climb up. There was an upper class. The upper class was there on the basis of breeding. And this upper class controlled this area, and you could never move in there except under rare conditions. Under democracy, we say that anybody can get to the top. But the reality is that regardless of whether there's upward mobility or the rules for the upward mobility, the fact of the matter is that there are elites and there are common people. And whether they allow upward mobility and the rules by which they allow upward mobility, these are all things we can discuss, etc., later on. But be aware that in this age of so-called freedom, apparently everybody can move upwards. But the reality is not quite so. And there are pros and cons, and that's a discussion for another day. But just to say that even in this day and age, do not believe that all people are equal. There are elites. The elites are defined by wealth. The elites in the modern day are defined by wealth and money. That's the definition of the elite. 200 years ago, the elite was defined by breeding. And there have been various versions and incarnations of this. But you always have an elite. There will be an elite. Even Hitler created an elite. There's a need for an elite. So don't imagine that it's all free and all easy. So here's a pretty cool meme that someone came up with, and it said, socialism, and this is obviously national socialism, doesn't mean taking wealth from those who work hard and giving it to those who don't. You're thinking of capitalism. And that's alluding to the Jewish parasite. Now, here's something that Adolf Hitler said. And listen to this. We are socialists. We are enemies of today's capitalistic economic system. For the exploitation of the economically weak, with its unfair salaries, So here's a new concept, unfair salaries, with its unseemly evaluation of a human being according to wealth and property, instead of responsibility and performance. And we are all determined to destroy this system under all conditions. Now we're getting to some deeper stuff here. The key points in here is this. We are the enemies of a system that exploits the economically weak. With its unfair salaries and unseemly evaluation of a human being. And I want to focus here on this thing. Unfair salaries, and especially this piece, unseemly evaluation of a human being. In other words, a human being's measure. Hitler is here saying that he's against the way in which you measure a human being. That he does not think it is correct to measure a human being by his wealth and property. That you need to rather measure a person by his responsibility and performance. And when you say performance, you're talking meritocracy, really. So you are measuring a person by his responsibility and performance, and you're looking at what he is doing rather than what he has. And he says, we are all determined to destroy this system under all conditions. But he says that it's an unfair valuation of a human being, that this is what he's against. And in here is something deep, and I like this a lot. And let me show you what Goebbels said. Dr. Goebbels was a very bright man, and I must tell you, some of the things that that man said, he was really sharp. And here's a quote from Goebbels. He says, as socialists, we are opponents of the Jews because we see in the Hebrews the incarnation of capitalism, of the misuse, and here's the key here, of the misuse of the nation's goods. Now here is similar to what Hitler's talking about. He's talking about the fact that you're looking at an economic system where the actual money and the whole system and its evaluation and its way of looking at things is wrong. And here he is specifically saying, Goebbels is saying, that you're looking at the misuse of the nation's goods. And that is very important. They are against what you could almost call the corruption. I think this is probably the best way to describe it. They're against the corruption of the system of capitalism. That they see in capitalism things that are fundamentally wrong. Things that are wrong, things that are not good for the nation. And that is what really bothers them. I like this little meme that somebody put together. I think this meme explains communism, capitalism, and socialism better than any other meme that exists. And here it is. Communism. You see the worker working at gunpoint. You will go and you will work at gunpoint. Capitalism. You're busy working And somebody's busy taking out of your pocket. And here is National Socialism, where everybody is a worker and everybody is a soldier. This is National Socialism. This is the system. And I must tell you that I think that this little explanation, this is the clearest way of defining how these things work. This is the system for the common man. I really like this little cartoon or meme. More of a meme than a cartoon. But I like it a lot. And here's a great one that somebody put together. Capitalism, and you see the fat man, fat. Here you see communism, the thin man, he's not got enough to eat, too much to eat, too little to eat, and fascism. Fascism, a system built on strength. And this for me, this is the real system. And of course, this should also be National Socialism in here. But I really like these things. These are good comparisons. This is what you're looking at fundamentally between these systems. Now we're going to get a little bit, take a bit of a closer look at capitalism. This man is called John Keynes. And Keynes was an extremely influential British economist. And his thinking drove the Western world for decades. In a nutshell, his thinking basically says that you've got to use some measure of government control. But his thinking as to which measure of government control, it's not the same as National Socialism, strictly speaking. And I think the topic of National Socialist Nazi economics is a more complex subject. But this is leaning towards the understanding that you've got to let the government take care of some things. A common lie in the Western world that all liberals, especially English speakers, accept is the notion that you must leave everything to business. Business knows best. Business will do the right thing. Business will do the good thing. In other words, government, keep your hands off business. Business is the best thing there is. And I don't believe in that at all anymore. You have to have some kind of government intervention. But the nature and the method of the government intervention needs to be discussed. That's a complex topic. Now, Keynes's thinking, which played a big role in the West for a long time, but I think it's faded away to some degree. But I think his thinking is pretty logical to a certain degree. And he himself, by the way, is quite a weird character. He was actually in love with men. He was actually a faggot, Keynes. He's not Jewish, but he was a faggot and he had many love affairs with men. And then he turned bisexual and eventually actually married a Russian ballerina. And finally, he actually seemed to find happiness. So he actually became normal at the end of his life. But rather a bit of a strange character. But he was pretty clever, and This is a quote from him, and he says, "Capitalism is the astounding belief that the most wickedest of men will do the most wickedest of things for the greatest good of everyone." And that's actually a pretty good quote, that from Keynes, that the wickedest of men will do the most wickedest of things for the greatest good of everybody. And therein I would agree with him, that you need to control the rich. You do. And exactly how the economy must work, that's a topic, that's a deeper topic for a discussion on the National Socialists. But this is a good quote from Keynes. So let's take a look at Jewish capitalism. And my question, does Jewish capitalism actually work? And I'm going to tell you why I say that Jewish capitalism doesn't work at all. It's a complete and utter and total failure. Let me tell you what really struck me about Jews and capitalism. In the days when I had Jewish friends, I deeply believed in capitalism, and I debated with my Jewish friend, and we talk about these blacks and their desire for communism and how totally stupid that is, and we agreed on all these topics. My Jewish friend said many things, and nowadays, with older age, I discount everything he said, even the things that sounded reasonable, even the things that sounded good, even the things that one would have thought are logical. I actually have reached the point in my life where I don't listen to anything a Jew has to say. Nothing at all. Nothing a Jew says is worth listening to. Absolutely nothing. And I mean that. I mean absolutely nothing. There is nothing you can learn from them, nothing they can teach you, and nothing at all that they can tell you that is worth listening to. That's the stage of my life that I've reached. Among the things we used to discuss about the blacks was, for example, the blacks and their communism. And my Jewish friend would say, he'd say to me, "You know, these black people, why can't they just understand that if they go and they set up a stall by the side of the road and they build their little business, that is how they'll be able to feed themselves, that they have to start small, but eventually this thing's going to work for them." Now, the blacks themselves are socialists. And in their case, they're outright communists because they were supported and armed and funded by the Russians and the Chinese, the Soviet Union. And my Jewish friend would say to me, "Oh, well, you see, these blacks, if they just understood, if we made the pie being the economy, if we grew the pie, then there'd be more for everybody." And I'd say to him, yes, you're right. You know, if we grew the pie, then yeah, that sounds cool. You know, make the pie bigger, work on making the economy bigger, and yeah, then there's going to be more for everybody. Well, I must tell you that nowadays when I sit and I think about these things, I think that all of these discussions are a total load of rubbish. And yet, back then, you know, you're talking 10 years ago, back then I was like, yeah, this is right. Nowadays I'm thinking it's total junk. Firstly, there's some hypocrisy in here. Here's the Jew, Jews who are greedy, Jews who are grabbing everything. And whenever I spoke to my Jewish friend, he had all these wild ambitions for himself of all these massive things he wanted to achieve using money. And he was thinking of how to become a multimillionaire and a billionaire, and he had these vast ideas. And one of his ideas was property, and a particular part of property. And he said to me, oh, do you know that Australia's got the same laws as South Africa? And in this particular area of property, in this case it had to do with apartments and what is known in South Africa as sectional title. He said, do you know that Australia's got laws, sectional title laws, that are almost the same as South Africa? If we can make these changes here in South Africa, then we can go to Australia and we can take over the whole market. So he's not thinking about setting up his little stall next to the side of the road like the blacks. He's thinking of controlling an entire area of industry in Australia. The good news is that he failed. But that is how the Jew thinks. So the Jews are grabbing on to everything at the top, seizing everything they can, controlling everything they can, dominating everything they can. And then they say to the others, oh, well, you see, you just don't understand capitalism. You must go and set up your little stall next to the side of the road, he says to the blacks. And of course, the blacks aren't excited by this, but neither are the whites. But meanwhile, the Jew is thinking about controlling everything because they've got all their buddies and their contacts, and they can do anything the hell they want economically, and nobody is going to get in their way. Of course, also, as part of their hypocrisy, whenever a white guy wants to do his own thing, they cut off the funding to whites and to the white right and to all whites who are thinking in racial or conservative terms. They do this to every white in every country. So yeah, if you're a Jew and all your Jew buddies are controlling the system and you can all slip in there together, yeah, and you can be the owner of all these big things, sure, capitalism sounds freaking awesome. But everybody else is relegated to, oh, well, you see, you need to learn how to start with a little stall. Yeah, yeah, yeah. While you grab most of the pie. Now, regarding the pie and the size of the pie, he said, well, you see, if you make the pie bigger, the economy, if you make the pie bigger, then there's more for everybody. Back then, I didn't even know about Jewish sophistry and this notion of saying things that sound logical but aren't logical. I didn't know about those things. And I took these kinds of statements at face value. But nowadays, I listen to that. And also, of course, the junk arguments that are emotional. I also don't listen to emotion-based arguments at all. Not interested in emotion-based arguments, except when they pertain to white people. When they pertain to white people, their children, their families, their lives, then I'll listen to emotional arguments. But to others, I have no interest in their emotional arguments. And the Jew, of course, is also making an emotional argument. Well, you see, if we can make the pie grow bigger, then everyone gets more of the pie. Now, that's a nice little piece of theory there, but the question is, how do you grow this pie? How exactly do you make the pie bigger? And that's when you start heading into the world of National Socialism, Nazism. Because there are the Germans telling you how an economy works. And even more modern Germans, I've done other things that I've studied and looked at and not yet put it into videos. Even more modern Germans, even a professor of economics that I was watching in one video, they talk about the fact that the economic system must reflect actual economic activity. Germans look on the economy not as a magic bag of tricks, but as something that's based on reality. And here is where we start moving into the reality of economics. That economics isn't this mysterious Jewish bag of tricks, that out of this thing comes money and work and wealth. It's not a mysterious Jewish bag of tricks. It's an actual thing based on reality. Somebody's got to work. Somebody's got to have some kind of capital input into what they do. They have to be creating something and selling something. Somebody's got to be producing something. And how do you produce this thing? And if you look at the Western world, and this includes South Africa, in the Western world, there is very little discussion about how do you actually make an economy work. It's filled with all these magic bags of tricks, sitting here and sitting there. You've got a bank over here that's pumping out money, you've got something else over there, but never do they really get down to concrete things, to concrete stuff. Even a guy like Keynes, for example, who is an economist and his thinking played a big role in the West. Keynes, for example, said that the government should leave the economy alone until the economy runs into a recession. Leave the economy alone, don't mess with it, but when a recession comes, the way that you get out of the recession is you spend more money. The correct thing to do in a recession is spend more money. This is very similar to what the Americans are doing when they do their, quotes, stimulus packages. It's very similar in that you are pumping money into the economy. But in his case, he's saying the government must spend more. And I've heard these kinds of debates going on here in Africa as well, here in South Africa itself, where they say, you know, government should spend more money and government should do this and government should do that. But what I notice is that there is a total lack of understanding of what it means, because they just say spend more. Now, what does that mean? And is spending just by itself, is that a good thing? And as I've sat and thought more about economics and what Hitler did and what governments do and what actually is going on and what is working in America, what is working in Europe, what worked in South Africa, well, I now have much better ideas of what the spending should be on. And in a very basic nutshell, I will tell you that the spending has to be on infrastructure. That is a basic line of thinking, but it's more than just infrastructure, but infrastructure is a key and critical part. And let me just leave it at that. I'm not going to go into a discussion about what you need to do in order to actually make an economy work. But what I'm trying to get at is it's not just spending wildly on just any kind of junk. You've got to spend on very specific things. You've got to have very specific plans. If you do not have these things and you do not do hard and deep thinking about what it must be spent on, why it must be spent on that, how you're going to facilitate all these things and all the things that go with it, that is what you need to do. It's not just about going and just writing out checks wildly for anything. Oh, we're going to spend something on healthcare. We're going to spend some money on that. We're going to spend some money on the poor. We're going to spend some money on reusable energy. We're going to spend some money on this. We're going to spend some money on cleaning up oil. And it's not just about spending wildly. It's about spending with a particular mission in mind, very calculated thinking. In actual fact, as an aside, if you look at some of the European colonialism in Africa, some of the European colonialism that got a bad name even, like the Belgians in the Congo, you will actually see that there are whites who came to Africa with very specific plans. And those plans, if left to themselves, were going to bring about big rewards. There was actual careful thinking that was done. And those whites got a bad name for all of this. But there is actual logical thinking that can be done and should be done in order to actually make your economy work. You can actually make an economy do almost anything. But the thing you really need to think about is what actually will work properly. And if we go and we look at ancient historical examples, you'll begin to see what I'm getting at. But anyhow, Keynes said spend more. And his view was basically that the government can drive the economy and the government can lift the economy. And he used spending as his way of pumping money into the economy. But if you look at these liberals and Jews and all these modern types, they talk all kinds of nonsense about all kinds of crap. Here, for example, we are sitting with this COVID nonsense in 2020. And now people are talking that, well, Bill Gates is going to make trillions of dollars out of vaccines and assorted shit. Now, is that actually the proper way to drive economies and to put people to work? Are those really the kinds of things that you need to do? And this is where what I'm getting at is that in order to make things work properly, you need to have bigger plans, deeper thoughts. There's got to be a whole lot more strategy involved in this. And you don't get this from business. You don't get this from business. This is where governments have to do things. And if you are to run an economy properly, you've got to have some kind of proper national strategy, proper national strategies. And that is going to be the only way that whites are able to get out of anything at all, ever. But here we are, and we're just floundering around, and this guy's busy making music, and that one's busy doing some other junk, and somebody else is busy inventing some kind of crap, and somebody else is doing a whole bunch of service industry stuff. And by the way, notice how in modern times, the Western world has had vast amounts of its industry and jobs destroyed. Destroyed. This is true for Britain, true for America, true for Europe. A lot of their factories and manufacturing now lives in China. And so there are enormous amounts of service industries that exist, but the actual means of production, the factories, the technology, all that stuff, all those skills are not sitting in Western countries anymore. This, by the way, is a national security risk. If you've got your enemy manufacturing your stuff, that's bad news. That's really stupid, okay? So I'm just trying to sketch out some of the nonsense that's going on. Go and look in America under Jewish influence. You'll see that everything is a service industry now. There are huge service industries. And I would go so far as to say, I've even thought of doing videos like this, to say that everybody is a Jewish salesman. That includes you and me. We're all actually salesmen for the Jews. We are engaged in junk stuff instead of being able to create. But you can't create because Jews have already seized control of all the means of production. The common man cannot compete with a factory that is filled with the latest technology and which can produce 100,000 times more products than he can at a fraction of the price. So you'll find that everything's been removed from us and you can't even compete with anybody because the odds are against you. So the way the world has evolved is we've got all these junk service industries and we're not doing physical things which we really should be doing. And even at a national level, there are things that must be done and must be protected, and they aren't. But that's just to give you some of my thoughts, a few of my basic thoughts. So anyway, returning to the Jews and making the pie bigger. Making the pie bigger, load of rubbish, okay? Load of rubbish if it means more musicians. Load of rubbish if it means everybody's got to have YouTube channels. You know, you've got to get back to practical, realistic things. Don't you need more doctors, more scientists, more engineers, more technicians, more machinists, more people who can do all kinds of useful stuff. These things are, for me, a reflection of Germanic thinking, if I may call it that, Germanic European thinking, that you actually got to think about the things that you can actually do that actually mean something. Take things to their most ridiculous extremes. Imagine you've got a nation where everybody is a musician, and that the only goods that you've got is what's coming out of your sales of music. Then you'd have to import absolutely everything. And that's the kind of thing I'm trying to get to, is we've got so much junk that we're also producing that's junk and that's not really necessary. But now let's talk about Jewish capitalism and my realization in more recent times, a realization that really hit me straight in the face. And it had to do with these Jews who are moving around from country to country. So here are the Jews who, on the one hand, are the priests of capitalism. And the Jews are like, yes, yes, must start a business, do capitalism. Business is the way to go. Capitalism and free market is the way to go. Though, of course, capitalism is not the laissez-faire capitalism, is not the free market that you believe it to be. When you're dealing with the Jew controls part of the capitalism, and the Jew prevents your entry into what you believe is the free market. So it's not quite what it appears to be, as always with Jews. And they are talking about the free market and business, and you know, that is what you must do, and be creative and invent all kinds of businesses. Here in South Africa, the people that I knew who were richer and in with the Jews, people were inventing all kinds of junk shops, junk products. And I'm sure you've seen lots and lots of these junk products, junk shops, mass-produced garbage that comes out of some place and it turns into a fad and everybody buys this useless thing just because everybody else is buying it and it gets a bunch of publicity. But is that product actually doing anything for us? And why have we spent money on something that, A, has no use, except perhaps a bit of entertainment, but you have B, which is a product that has consumed actual physical resources. You needed to go and buy raw materials, process it through a factory. You had to transport it and use fuel to process it in a factory. And you had to take people and make them work at this, buy machines to make this. And so you produced some useless toy and you mass produce it and sell it to everybody. It's consumed time, it's consumed raw materials, it's consumed all kinds of time and effort and petrol and so on and electricity. It's consumed all this stuff, and yet it actually has no value to anybody. You've wasted physical resources, including human time, which itself is limited, in producing a piece of junk just because you could sell it at a big profit. Now, I'm not saying that you must stop all kinds of fun things, but I've seen lots and lots and lots of junk. True junk in South Africa, in America, etc. True junk that has come out of the system and consumed resources that actually are not needed, that are truly wasted. And if those people were put to work doing something better, things could have moved forward better. Why, for example, would you want to put people in a place doing something frivolous, when maybe what you need is more roads, more houses, or something else that has a value? And if you talk to these Jewish types, you'll see that they come up with endless rubbish ideas, all kinds of silly junk ideas and business twists. And they just think up new junk ideas, all kinds of rubbish, man. And all they think of is just the profit, the profit. Can I make this and sell it at a profit? And that's all they think about. But I think that having capitalism and having an economy and everything's just based on pure profit, I ask myself how much of that is effective and useful for the country, really. But I do understand that some things have got a value in that maybe you're sitting and doing some service work and it does add value to something. I'm not against all these things, but I'm just saying that there's junk. There's genuine junk and genuine crap that starts entering all kinds of products. You can even see it in cars, man. Look at cars and all the rubbish that are in those cars. And the car literally costs the price of a house here in South Africa in some cases. A car literally costs the price of a house. And it's for all its funny little electronic doodads. But the car doesn't go any faster than cars went 50 years ago and that kind of thing. So I'm just saying that if you look carefully at economics, you'll see all kinds of junk. You'll also see companies engaging in non-free market behavior. So companies will produce products that deliberately do not match up with the components of other products so that you can only buy their components. So instead of getting reusability, you have companies who design into their products a lack of reusability so that you can only get their stuff and only use their stuff. And they go to great lengths to force people to do that, and they push up prices and so on. If you look into capitalism, you will see wastage like you've never seen before. There is masses of needless duplication, masses of wastage, and because governments do not issue rules or do not play any more constructive part in the economy, there are lots of things that could have been made more efficient. Suppose, for example, you forced car manufacturers to operate within certain boundaries in certain things, and you had reusability of certain components. You could actually allow things to function using less physical resources. The Germans struggled tremendously with a lack of physical resources. Europe as a whole struggles with a lack of physical resources. And there are ways around this. If you use engineering techniques, if you use efficiency techniques and methods that whites have developed. In other words, there is a certain amount of junk and pure wastage, needless duplication to unbelievable lengths for all kinds of stuff that really has little purpose. But here are the Jews, and they're running around. Anything that makes a profit, that just goes. So here are these Jews who also now have got Israel. And they say, oh, we needed a place of our own. We wanted Israel. And, you know, now we have Israel. But start studying the movements of these Jews. Now, in my own studies here in South Africa, and I'm going to come back to this topic, the Jewish population in about the 1960s, these are the bits and pieces I've been able to pick up. The Jewish population in South Africa grew until by the 1960s, it was about 100,000 Jews. Then it continued to grow possibly into the 1970s or early 80s until it was about 180,000 Jews. Then the Jewish population started going down until by about 2010, the Jewish population was down to about 75,000. In other words, over about 20 to 30 years, the Jewish population dropped by more than half. And now, in 2020, we're looking at possibly as few as 50,000 Jews left in South Africa. So the Jews on their own have had their own population increasing by their by measurements against themselves, has had their population increasing, let's say, from 100,000 to 180,000, that would be, say, an increase of 80% in, say, 10 to 20 years, roughly. And then you've also had that same Jewish population collapse by about 60%, 60% at least, maybe even more, in a period of 40 years. If you had to now go and look at the percentage changes in the Jewish population of South Africa over the last 60 years, and you had to compare those percentage changes to the percentage change in the white population, you would see that the Jewish population increased by much more massive percentages than the whites, and it also decreased by much more massive percentages than the whites. And by the way, Adolf Hitler, in one of his speeches, said that there's this international clique, the Jews, and that the Jews who live in London, Paris, Amsterdam, etc., and they can move around as they please, and that the normal people cannot do that, cannot follow them or follow their example. What Adolf Hitler said then is as true today as it was then. Large numbers of whites cannot move around in the same way as Jews. Jews are much more nomadic. And even now in this age of Israel, Jews are still nomadic. You are getting a slow growth in the population of Israel, but the vast mass of Jews don't even want to go to Israel. So why is that? And I once asked my Jewish friend, I said to him, you know, why don't you go and live in Israel? And you know what? He shook his head and he said, no. He didn't explain it more, but he was definitely determined not to go and live in Israel. Now, why is that? Now, if you look more closely, you'll see that there's this stupid Jewish organization. It's like the World Council of Jews or something. I think it's the World Council of Jews or the World Jewish Council or some rubbish like that. This is now the highest Jewish organization in the world for all these scumbag Jews. And if you go and look at them and their actions, they actually go around and have done in the past. They've gone to places where Jews are not welcome. I think Hungary was an example. I think it was Hungary. Could be wrong. And they like forced their way in there and they had a world conference of Jews in Hungary or so. I think it was Hungary. And they did so in a place that they knew they were unwelcome. And they wanted to establish and make it known to everybody that they want to be able to go into Hungary. And you'll see, if you look at these Jews, watch these high-ranking Jews. They insist, they absolutely insist that Jews be allowed into every Western country. And in more recent times, the Spaniards, who had kicked the Jews out of Spain for 500 years, in recent times, the Jews have been let back into Spain. And I feel sorry for the Spanish. And by the way, the Spanish did a fantastic thing by keeping the Jews out for 500 years. That was an amazing feat. No whites have kicked the Jews out for longer than the Spaniards. Spaniards should get a real award for that, I must tell you. So why are the Jews returning to Spain, where they were chased out and made unwelcome for 500 years? Why are Jews from Israel going to Germany? And why is the Jewish population in Berlin increasing? Why? Why are Jews leaving Israel and also going and living in other European countries? And by the way, in South America, you've got one of the biggest Jewish populations there in Argentina. I think you've got something like 300,000 Jews there. And then, of course, more than half of the world's Jewish population lives in the United States of America. So here's my question for you. If capitalism is so good, if capitalism is such a great system, why don't the Jews all go to Israel and practice capitalism in Israel? If the Jews want to be together, why is there a necessity for Jews to insist on access to almost every country that they can lay their hands on, especially every Western country? Why do Jews go into countries that are hostile to them, where the whites are hostile to them? Why do they insist on going there? What is going on? And here, my friends, is where I think the answer to the whole question of capitalism and business lies. If you go and you look at every place where Jews have lived and made money, including South Africa, where lots of them made a lot of money, and my one Jewish friend in Jerusalem, he said to me, some of the richest Jews who come to Israel come from South Africa. If capitalism and business is so great, why do Jews have to move around and even move into countries, even like Germany, where the people really don't like them and don't want them around? If you go and you look at the percentage of Jews in any country where Jews have been, Jews normally make up a tiny percentage of the white population. Even in South Africa, with its small white population, Jews at their most made up 4% of the white population. The country with the highest percentage of Jews in their population was Poland. They had 10% of their population was Jews. But everywhere else, the Jews are much smaller. South Africa with its 4% is quite high, actually. But everywhere else, look at the United States, Jews make up 2% of the population. So what does this really tell us about capitalism? And the answer is that capitalism, as practiced by these Jews and espoused by these Jews, cannot work on a small population. That in actual fact, a small population has to go into a much bigger population, and only in that bigger country with its bigger population can capitalism work. Now, this same Jewish friend of mine who didn't want to go to Israel, he would look at the Indians, and he'd say, oh God, you know, there's like a billion Indians, and the population is growing so fast. And the top Jew in South Africa, the top Jewish strategist in South Africa, his name is Clem Sunter of Anglo-American. This Jew would go around the world, and he'd come back, and he'd tell the other Jews, you know, where the big things are. And he'd come back and tell them about China and about India and so forth. And these Jews would get so excited about these enormous populations. That is because they see enormous populations of cheap workers, but also enormous populations of consumers. And they are looking at nabbing chunks of everybody else's economy. In other words, their own behavior proves that they are parasites, that they have a system and a method of living that they are selling that cannot work for the very people that they are amongst. It can work for them with their small population. They go into a big country and they seize key industries, key businesses in those countries. And yeah, then it rocks. Then it rocks totally for them, but it doesn't rock for the locals. Capitalism, just like Hitler when he called them an international clique, capitalism only works for the few. And if capitalism was actually something you could implement everywhere, then they should have been able to go and all live in Israel and all use capitalism in Israel without needing all those connections to everybody around the world. And also, the other thing is that Jews are promoting globalism and promoting putting their fingers into every country's pie. Again, it should show you this is parasitism at work, that they cannot live by themselves, that their system cannot work for the majority, but it can work for an elite. A nomadic elite who move around the world can indeed live like that. Yes, it does work like that. And one woman I knew, I still want to tell you about her, the Jewish woman I knew, who married an Afrikaans guy, she herself would tell me about the elite because she was so connected to them. And I asked her many questions, and I could see that her attitude was different to my attitude. And I eventually began to realize that these elites, including the Goyim, the Shabbos Goyes, who are part of this, the white, pathetic scum who grovel at the feet of the Jews, these people think like Jews. And they also talk in terms of, oh, well, you know, if things go wrong in the country, you know, we'll move to Australia or we'll move to the United States or somewhere else or Europe. These people really are actually not loyal and faithful citizens of any country, I must tell you. But it is clear from their thinking that they think in terms of the nomadic rich. They are not tied to any particular country, and for their system to work, they constantly have to look for opportunities elsewhere. And when I spoke to my Jewish friend, he'd say to me, oh, you see, we've got a guy, one of our guys is up in the upper echelons of Google, and we've got somebody else over there, and there are business opportunities over here, and there are business opportunities over there, and great things are happening in this country and that country. And that's all they're doing, is they are looking for opportunities in other people's countries. Not in the country they live in, but in the countries where other people live. Whether they are whites, and mostly it's whites, or even blacks or Indians or Chinese, they are looking for opportunities in other people's countries. They are globalists because they are constantly hunting around to see who's doing what that is working, and then they dive in there. They are constantly on the lookout for opportunities. And that's how these scum came to South Africa, because South Africa was the top place in the world for gold and diamonds. South Africa was just rolling in gold output and diamond output, and they all dashed here from Europe. These people cannot create opportunities where they are. They have to seek opportunities in other people's countries. And when those opportunities dry up, or when they've helped to destroy the country's internal infrastructure to such a degree that you can no longer make a profit there, they pack their bags and these rich nomadic scum leave the country. And they go and they find the next port of opportunity. And they are constantly roaming the earth looking for opportunities in other people's countries. They can't create the opportunities themselves. Other people have to struggle and build and do things. And then when things look like there's an opportunity there, only then do the Jews arrive. And when the opportunities dry up, or they've damaged the country to such an extent that there are no opportunities left, then they pack their bags and they go to the next place. You're dealing with a race of nomadic garbage, and everything that they tell all of us is unworkable for us. And the only reason they can be among us is because they are busy preaching what works for them. So they go into the Western world, they go into the United States, and they say, oh, capitalism and free market, just like they did in South Africa and everywhere else in the West. But they say that in order for them to get in there. That's really what they're saying. But the truth is that for the common person, this isn't going to work. You and I, at best, might have our little one-man business or a family business. Go and look in the history of Europe and you'll see the family business. You'll see father and son in many industries in past ages. You'll see a father worked with his son and he handed things over to his son, or the two of them worked together. Go and look at the way things used to work in Europe, and you will see that it had to do with labor. And this is what the Germans were about. This is what Hitler was about. National socialism. It's about labor, because somebody's got to do the freaking work. The Jews aren't doing the work. The Jews are looking at the billions of Indians and billions of Chinese who are going to do the work. The Jews are looking at the whites of America and Europe who are going to do the work. And they're just looking at how they're going to get their fingers into the pie and scam off a cut of everybody else's economy. Jews are coming and grabbing a chunk of everybody else's economy. They, of course, come with their quotes, global experience, and they tell you, oh, we are such an old, experienced people, and we know the ways of the world, and we will teach you all the newest things. They use those very lines here in South Africa, I must tell you. In the 1980s, they were big into using those lines. Oh, we're going to teach you about this, and we're going to show you how the world progresses, says the lying scum of rich nomads who walk the face of the earth and jump to where there's an opportunity and run away from hardship when it approaches. Meanwhile, the whites who live there have got to live there through the good and the bad. Hitler himself was extremely outraged by this, by the Jews of Austria, how the Germans had to go and fight, and the struggles of the Germans and all the things they lost, while the Jews were sitting just making money and the Germans were getting killed. But it was the Germans who were holding the country together. And the Jew, of course, does nothing. He's just there for profiteering. He's truly the lowest form of life. I was reading about how the Japanese used to think. And the Japanese in Japanese society used to regard traders, in other words, business people, they used to regard traders as the lowest level of society. The lowest level of society. But here we are in this day and age worshipping the very people who in other countries where they had sense regarded them as the lowest form of life. So capitalism is useful as a marketing tool. You run around globally, you tell everybody, no, we all need each other, we all got to work together, all of us together. And it's just so that Jews can pull strings, Jews can get inside, Jews can use cheap labor from this country while selling to another country, Jews can play the entire earth. Globalism and capitalism is so that they can play the game across the entire surface of the earth. But you and I, just like the Germans in the time of Hitler, we are stuck in one country. Yes, individuals of us can move between countries, but you cannot take everybody and move everybody out of Germany and put them in Canada. You cannot take all the Canadians and stick them in Italy. You cannot do these things. So for the common white, he's a nationalist, he's got to function in the country in which he's born, and he's got to live with the consequences of it. But Jews don't. Jews don't. They're a race of nomadic rich filth, and they can advocate any dangerous thing because if the consequences don't work out, they just pack their bags and they move to the next opportunity.
So they can do damage in a country without suffering the consequences, whereas the common white man and woman has to take responsibility and will suffer the consequences, just like the whites of Southern Africa have, and the whites of South Africa in particular. So capitalism as a system and globalism as a system that you can preach to the white masses is not a thing that's viable. It's not actually possible. It's not actually doable. Yes, you can do it if you go to Africa like whites, like we've done, and we control the entire black economy. And we control all the blacks and we can actually control the system. Yes, then capitalism does have some value. But as a system among ourselves, it's got too many problems. It's actually only a system that really works for the elite. Yes, you can have farming and certain industries where, yes, capitalism functions quite well with a couple of people. Farming is one of the best examples, where you maybe have a farmer or a farming family or a father and his son or a father and his two sons, and they can do something. But in many, many industries, this is not possible. The technology and the balance between capital and technology does not allow it to happen. And so there are many areas where big companies dominate. Take things like banking and insurance. Try and get into those areas and see how lucky you are. You know, the only way you can function in insurance is to become an agent for a big insurance company. Other than that, you can't function. You cannot compete. You cannot come up with your own products. You don't have the means to. You don't have the capital. You don't have the market share. You just don't have those things. But my key point here is that the Jews themselves are the living proof, the living absolute proof that capitalism as a concept cannot work. It can't work. Yes, you can have some capitalists and some rich in a country, but you will soon see that much of the country is controlled by a handful of people. This happens in every country. Eventually, there's an elite that comes out of this. And this elite, once established, they can hold on to the reins of power. And they then control the money. In different books about Portugal, in one book they spoke about 11 families who control Portugal, but in another one I read of 200 families that control Portugal. But the bottom line is that you go and look in any country, and you'll see a limited number of people are the real capitalists, are the real movers and shakers. That capitalism is fine as a system for creating and maintaining an elite, but it's not fine as a system for the common man. It's not workable. The common man in all these capitalist countries, the common person, you and me, what were we most of our lives? Well, we were workers. That's all we were. We were workers for most of our lives. That is what we were. We weren't multimillionaires. We weren't billionaires. The vast majority of us were born to be workers. That's all that we did. We had our field or fields that we worked in, and that was that. And that is all that you can do in that country. You are limited by the population, you're limited by the natural resources, you're limited by the weather, but at the end of the day, you are a worker for the rich. The government might not be paying you, but most of the people you'll work for in your life will be the rich, or companies created by the rich, or owned by the rich. So at the end of the day, when you've got someone like Hitler coming along and saying, well, he's got a system for all the people, for the common people. And as you saw in that thing where we had that meme where it showed that in National Socialism, Everybody is a worker and everybody is a soldier. That, my friend, is the fate of most people. And the best that you can hope for is to move up the ranks to some degree inside that system. But it is physically impossible for everybody to be at the top of that system. You've got to have workers. You've got to have people right down to the ground. And by the way, this presents a special problem for the whites of South Africa, because we need to even get workers in areas that we don't have workers. We have to change our way of thinking. But that's another topic. The rest of the Western world does have large numbers of common working whites in blue-collar fields, etc. And so, if capitalism was a great system, and capitalism was as good as they say it is, then Jews would not need to wander around the earth from country to country looking for the best opportunities to seize in each country. Jews are financial colonists. They are going around everywhere scouring the planet for opportunities in other people's countries. And that should show you that this system is not a system that can work for the common white. That Jews themselves, in saying, oh, we need a country, but meanwhile, the vast majority of Jews aren't living in the country that they want. These things should show you that capitalism is a failure. Capitalism as a system is a total failure. It is not something that you can preach to the common man. It is not a system that you can even preach to even a country. Because countries have their own independence, they've got their own limited resources. You can only use capitalism if you are looking, capitalism and globalism, if you are looking at trying to grab the best pieces of other people's pies in other countries, financially. That is the only thing you can do with this thing. But it doesn't allow you to build a country and to maintain a country. In fact, that's one of its weaknesses, is that this system can only seize opportunities in other countries where problems have been solved. The moment things go wrong, you can't contain things in that country, you can't stay in the country, you don't have the means to prevent the country from going down, you have to run away from the country, like the Jews do. This whole concept is anti-nationalist. It merely allows you to be a parasite across the face of the earth, hunting for opportunities elsewhere. And once you run out of those opportunities, you gotta leave. It's that simple. Capitalism as a concept is not a workable thing that even functions properly inside a single country. It might work better in big countries with large populations like the United States, or like certain countries in Europe like Britain, Germany, France. But the smaller the country becomes, the more limited you are. So my point is that these Jews who are advocates of capitalism and business, etc., it's only a workable thing for those who are parasites, for those who are globalists, for those who have the ability to go everywhere and to seize opportunities in other people's countries. It's not a workable system for inside a nation. And when I look at it that way, then I say to myself, capitalism is a total and utter failure as a system. It is a mechanism that you can preach as the elite. The elite can preach it and say, oh, well, you see, there are these wonderful opportunities. And by the way, just let me into your country. I just want to buy some of those mines and farms and factories in your country. That's where capitalism can work for the elites. But it ultimately is not a nationalist system, and it's not a system that actually has any real value other than as a means of financial colonization and financial seizure of other people's opportunities. That's all that you can do with this thing. This thing is not a method of living. It's not an answer to the problems of a country. A country still has to function as a nation, as a self-contained unit. And there is no answer to that with regard to capitalism. Whereas the Germans came and said, we've got a country, we've got workers, we need to get everybody working, we have to function inside this country, and we have to make everything work for our people. And I tell you, when I look at it that way, I just don't see any comparison between capitalism and Nazism. Nazism and capitalism have got nothing in common. And Nazism is the only logical way of thinking. It's the only logical way of thinking. There is nothing else. Now, Hitler did not wipe out capitalism. Hitler allowed private business to exist. Big private business and small private business. He allowed it to exist. But he still used government control to control and limit what they could do under certain conditions. Their actual system is quite complex, and I'm not going to go into it here, but they used very creative ways to determine and control the country's use of resources at various times so that everything would work for the country. And it was absolute genius how they did these things. They pulled off many feats. They basically took a capitalist country with a business model and still allowed it to function with lots of freedom, but the government controlled where things could go when those things were working against the interests of the nation as a whole. They always tried to push things in a direction that would work for the people as a whole. And frankly, I cannot see any other logical way of approaching life. And that takes you away from this thing of capitalism being this magic box of tricks that comes from Jews. It just magically runs. You have to have some kind of government control, oversight, intervention, and also the ability to determine the strategic objectives of the nation. In my early years in computers, I worked at Barclays Bank, the British bank, when they still had holdings in South Africa. And at a point, a sort of upper-class lady came to work on our team. She was a bored housewife. Her husband was in charge of the credit card division. And she worked on the team of computer programmers I was on, and she came to become a computer programmer because she was bored. Her children had left the house, and her husband was in charge of the entire credit card division of the bank. So a high-ranking official's wife was now working on the team. Her first name was Sue, and Sue would say to me, "You know, this country would be so much better off, or countries would be so much better off, if they were ruled by businessmen." Well, back then I listened to that and I thought, yeah, maybe so. Sounds like a good idea. Nowadays, I will tell you, the worst people who could rule the country are businessmen. These people are sellouts, traitors, weaklings, cowards. They've got all the kinds of characteristics that you don't want in the leaders of a country. Now that I know better, I can tell you now, the last thing you want is a country to be run only by businessmen. And she wasn't Jewish, she was English. But anyway, if the Jews are an example of anything, they are not an example of who you should listen to. And the things that they are walking around marketing have got no value and no meaning to the common person. Yes, you can have all kinds of freedoms among yourself, but ultimately you do need some kind of proper plan. you do need some kind of proper strategic thinking. And I must tell you that when it comes to economics, this black Jewish box of magic known as economics, this thing is filled with all kinds of scams and junk and rubbish in it. And Hitler was completely correct to start questioning this thing, looking at this thing, etc. And I think that there's much to be said for Hitler's view that its methods of measuring a person's worth, its methods of rewarding a person, all of these are wrong. All of these are wrong and not necessarily in the national interest. And of course, as should be evident to everybody in the West, definitely not in the interests of our race. Should be obvious that the misuse of resources, of profits, etc., in this capitalist system is crazy. And look at how this capitalist system now even tries to dominate politics. It tries to be a stronger force than the government itself. It's involved in revolutionary activity. It's involved in trying to control the thinking of an entire nation. And if the businessman looks at his profits, the Jewish businessman and his Shabbos Goy buddies, if they look at the profits and they say, oh, well, if you add up this and you subtract that, well, the outcome is, oh, goodness, we don't need white people. You know, get rid of the white people, replace them with black people. How the fuck is that working out for us? So when I look at that, I say to myself, look at them. Look at where they're taking us. Even the craziest government wouldn't do what these bloody businessmen are doing. No, this whole setup and this whole scam called capitalism, this thing has shown its weaknesses. It's shown all its evils. The capitalist goes and chummies up with communists who are your enemies. The businessman goes and assists countries that want to destroy your country and kill your children. No, everything about capitalism, the more I look at it, I say to myself, this system is a total failure. That the system that Hitler was talking about and Goebbels was talking about, these guys who are socialists, who are saying that you need a system that benefits the people, that you need a system that allows people to be measured properly. And, as Goebbels pointed out, you need a system that sees to it that the country's resources are used properly. These things are very critically important. And the smaller your country, the poorer your country, the more problems you have, the more you need to think very strategically and very carefully. The United States is maybe a rare example of 200 million whites sitting in a single country, and so there are many things that they can do that countries of 20 million can't do. But the difference is that National Socialism can work in a country of 4 million or 40 million or 400 million. Whereas with capitalism, your limitations are much greater. So all I'm saying is that if capitalism was so bloody great, then why can't all the Jews move to Israel and practice capitalism there and show how fantastic capitalism is? But they cannot. They cannot. Because the only value of this system is as a system of predation, a system of parasitism, where you've got to go and steal something from another country. You've got to go and infiltrate another country and another population and steal their stuff. Now, in the times of the Roman Empire and the ways that whites worked in the past, the stealing was more formal. The stealing meant go and conquer the other country and make that country part of your country, and then you control it as part of your state. And again, we get back to the concept of the state. The difference between that time and this time is simply that in the modern time, You don't go and control the other country. You go and grab their stuff while you can, and then you pull out when it suits you. But this is not a method for running your country. These ideas are of no value inside your own country. And I think that the only system, truly, the only system that makes any sense, that in any way, shape, or form makes the slightest bit of sense, is National Socialism. That's the only thing that actually takes you in a direction where you are not sitting with this magic box of tricks that is controlled by the Jews or some other elite. It's the only honest system there is. And it's the only thing that makes any actual logical sense in terms of how you allow people to function and how you try and control the limited resources of your country. You are limited by your population. You are limited by how much work you can do. You are limited by your natural resources, by your climate, by your land area. The reality of the world is that it's full of limitations. And you have to work within those limitations. And you have to organize your country within those limitations. And among the other things that you need to think about as well is defense and safety and those things. You've got to have a country that is strong in all its different aspects. If you don't do that, you cannot survive attack, infiltration, etc., etc. So you mustn't imagine that a country will always be at peace. A country has got to be strong enough to defend itself. You've got to be able to put up a fight. And in all these things, globalism presents huge weaknesses. Globalism may be good as a type of propaganda if your goal is the creation of the American empire. But even the creation of this American empire has got lots of problems and weaknesses with it, I must tell you. And it does even look like this American empire has got some serious limitations that are coming out after only a few decades of this experiment. You've got to go back to running a nation and making sure the nation is self-sufficient and strong. You've got to organize properly, otherwise you are asking for trouble. Otherwise you can be destroyed by the simplest of means without any effort at all. You could be destroyed by somebody merely cutting off some of your financial aid or some of your trading, etc., and then you collapse into a heap. Now you can't allow that. You've got to have a much stronger system. And the Germans, as far as I can tell, produced the strongest system for such a small group of people. They aren't such a small group of people. They were 70 million. But still, the strength of the system that came out of there was incredible. And if you look at all our ancient systems, our systems are strong. White people produce very strong systems for their number. And National Socialism is nothing more than a reflection of some of the systems that have come before, in certain senses. It's just more advanced in certain types of thinking, like the proper definition of socialism and how it's going to work. But yeah, let me wind up by just repeating myself again and just saying that it hit me that if capitalism is so great, then why aren't the Jews using it in Israel? Why are they not all moving to Israel? And the truth is they can't, because it is a parasitic system. It's not a system that you can actually use inside a country. You cannot really use it as your definition of your system. You need something that is much more aligned with the common person. We really need a system for whites that looks after whites. Honestly, we need a system that looks out for our people in all their ways of living. And National Socialism is the only thing that I see that anybody attempted to define from top to bottom, a system that can be used to look after all the people of the nation. The blacks, in their own sense, using communism, have tried to move in that direction for themselves with their bad and stupid definitions of what communism is. But it's in no ways comparable to the sophistication and the proper thinking of the Germans. And I wouldn't want to market it to them either. I think that the German system is the greatest system, and it's a system we whites should keep to ourselves. We should not go around marketing this to the world. I really think that there we've got a system that'll take care of our people and give our people a direction and a future and so forth, which is totally lacking in this current world, where there's no real thinking about what is our future, how are we going to have children, what is the future of the children, how are we going to look after ourselves, what are we going to do about population growth, what are we going to do about skills, how are we going to move forward. Do we have strategic plans that can bring us big wins? And all these things are totally lacking in the Western world. Totally. And I would go so far as to say that Jews and the elite have done all they can to destroy any kind of thinking that might lead in that direction. But yeah, if capitalism is so great, the fact that Jews need to scour the earth for capitalist opportunities should show you capitalism as a concept is a total and utter complete failure. And the only logical line of thinking is to follow European type thinking, which leans towards socialism. That's the only logical thing you can do. These are my websites: historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.